Okay, it's 1 o'clock.
We just need to confirm that we have a quorum. I see Dr. Mittman. I see Mr. Ball. Mr. Romano.
I'm back.
Mr. Romano's back. Dr. Leck.
I'm here.
Dr. Leck is back, and I believe Mr. Wallace has left the meeting. Mr. Wallace?
Yeah, I think he left right before the end of your reports.
Okay. So, Dr. Mittman, we have quorum.
All right. Let's do it. It is 1 o'clock, 1:01. We're back in session. And next up is the Student Tuition Recovery Fund. Mr. LaMountain?
I will refer this to Mr. Blanchard. Mr. Blanchard?
Hi, Mr. Chair, members of the State Board. Board staff received the claim for the closed school, American Institute of Interior Design, which closed on December 17th, 2021. CS and was enrolled in the certificate program from September 21st, 2021 until closure on December 17th, 2021. I've submitted the board report, the strife claim. We did get the ledger. It shows three cash payments with a total of $3,989, and that is what the claimant is requesting to be refunded.
Great. Well, thank you, Mr. Blanchard. It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
So why don't we get a motion a second, and then we'll have some discussion. Hopefully not a lot. We get a motion to approve the strife fund disbursement to the claimant.
I'll motion to approve the strife fund for the claimant. CS.
I'll second.
And Mr. Ball seconds. All right. Any discussion? Hearing none. Mr. LaMountain, can you call the vote?
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Lukey, absent. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace, absent. Ms. Cardullo, absent. By your vote of 4 ayes and 3 absent, the motion passes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blanchard. Way to go. All right, next up, Jersey College, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license applications for an initial license application. And Mr. LaMountain, do you have any introductory remarks
just
before we end?
Certainly. Dr. Mittman, members of the board, just briefly, Jersey College is seeking an initial regular accredited degree license to offer professional nursing associate degree. All the information regarding the institution is provided in your board packet, and you see the individuals that are that should be here representing the institution.
Great. Well, thank you very much, and I'm the board lead, so I get to say good afternoon to the chancellor and founder, as I believe, Mr. Karchewski. Would you like to make an opening remark?
Absolutely, and thank you, Mr. Mittman, and good afternoon, everyone. My name is Greg Karchewski. I'm the Chancellor of Jersey College, and I'm on with you today along with my Jersey College team and our colleagues from Northwest Health and their parent company, Community Health Systems. We thank the board for consideration of our application for our institution to establish a campus in Tucson inside of Northwest Medical Center. We're grateful for having worked with your professional staff members and want to thank Terry Stanfield, Kevin LaMountain, Jacqueline Rome, and Keith Blanchard. They've been very helpful through this process. We welcome your questions about our institution and our application.
Thanks. Sorry, you caught me off guard. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the submission, and also it was very interesting reading the history of the institution and how you started, and I really appreciate it. You know, I would say from what you've submitted, finances are very strong. You know, clearly your NCLEX records are really high. It looks like it at all of your campuses. You know, I don't really have a whole lot of questions. I had a couple of, you know, unusual questions. And so I see Stephen, over there, Litvak. I was interested in your crest, right behind you, the school logo and seal. And it was just interesting. It looks like a lighthouse, caduceus, and is that a genie lamp?
Yep. The education, for education. Yep, exactly. For educational excellence. And the lighthouse is kind of like the way we view it as kind of our, we have multiple entry and exit points in the program and beaming out and trying to give opportunities for our students to continue to educate themselves and find different pathways. So in our crest, we have lighting different pathways is what we talk about as our Latin phrase. And, you know, we're just really proud of like kind of what we, where we've come from 18 years. We only focus on nursing education, and it's a tough business. It's a tough to teach students and to get them through the program, and watching them go from a practical nursing student, go through our RN program and continue on to get their PhDs have been amazing in this past 18 years.
And do you have plans to expand into those other degree programs here in Arizona?
You mean in terms of practical nursing or higher credential degrees?
Yeah, I didn't know. I think the higher credential degree, the Doctor of Nursing Practice or other degrees that Mr. Litvak mentioned, I didn't know that you were part of the,
of the institution. I think what Mr. Litvak was, or what Stephen was talking about, is we're proud to see that our students progress and climb their career ladder and move on from a practical nurse to a registered nurse and then seek additional higher level degrees, baccalaureate degrees, MSNs, and even moving on toward terminal degrees. But as an institution, we're currently accredited by the Council on Occupational Education, so we're capped currently at the associate's degree, but we are in the process of seeking accreditation with Middle States Commission on Higher Education because we are based in out of New Jersey, actually. That's where our main campus is, and hope to in the future to have higher credential degrees once we receive that accreditation.
Great. Well, thank you. And I apologize for saying genie lamp. I wrote down oil lamp.
That's okay.
I do have a question in the audit, which, you know, confirms the strong financial position of the institution, and also the Title IV audit. I think you had one finding, one student out of 120. It was immaterial. So again, congratulations on that. Could you elaborate a little bit on strategy specialists and their role? It was in the notes under a related party, and it seems like each year, you know, it's somewhere between $700 and $1 million either contract or expenses.
It's Greg, I'll answer that if you don't mind. It's actually a company that I actually own. So it's a strategy company that we provide in management consulting services. And really it's just another way just to kind of make payments in the way that I work with Greg from day one. So when I joined this company 18 years ago, I had my consulting company, and it was kind of, rather than having the equity, it was to join that way and to have my company be hired as a consulting firm for the process.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks. Members of the board, questions for our folks from Jersey College?
I'll jump in really quickly. One, thank you for the submission of the materials. Pretty robust from that standpoint. And obviously, you're not new at doing this, given how many years you've been operating. But seeing that you're operating across many states and that, and having sensitivity, as I'm on the complaints committee, I actually chair it from that standpoint. A couple things jumped out at me that I just wanted to kind of call out that I think are probably opportunities for maybe a little more refinement. The refund policy that you have on the EA does not reflect 100% refund within the 3-day window. But in the catalog, it does call that out specifically under Arizona and then a couple other states that you have. So I don't know how best you can go about that. You may say additional information, please refer to the catalog on the EA or something like that. I mean, ultimately it'll go back to the catalog, but just as a point of clarity for at least the EA side of it, that a student could read that as, that it's not 100% refund within that 3-day window for them, minus, weekends and holidays type of a piece. And then the other piece that stood out to me, and I know this is going to be such a minor detail, and it's fantastic that you're affiliated with the hospital from that standpoint and the support. In one of the documents, it had that I think it was actually the MOU with Northwest Medical, has it at 294 beds. But in your catalog on page 9, you represent it as 300 beds. I realize that it's a very minute difference, but as we're always sensitive to students who would bring forward what they would consider to be misleading representation, I don't know if those beds fluctuate and what that looks like. Maybe there are 300 beds currently. Just to have sensitivity to that piece of it, that if you suddenly find yourself where something was cut, where it's only 200 beds now or whatever that looks like, there could be a perception by a student that could lead to frustration and ultimately bring them up in front of the board where now we're asking you to come forward and help clarify some of those elements. So just guidance from that standpoint. And that's all I got.
And thank you for those comments, Mr. Romano. We're very sensitive to ensuring that we're not misleading students, and we want to make sure that our representation and all of our documents are consistent. And the fact that you picked up on that is fantastic. It really means you delved into what we submitted. So thank you for that guidance.
You spent the time to submit it, and we need to spend the time to review it. So we appreciate that. That's all I had. Thank you.
Great. Other members, board members, questions?
Nothing here.
I'm out. Did I hear you say nothing?
I know, right?
Okay.
That's exactly what we strive to do.
Mr. Ball?
No comment.
Okay. So the extent of our questioning was on the accuracy of the number of beds, question about your logo and crest, and a note in the financial audit.
There can be advantages to going at the end of the day. Just saying.
It looks like you guys have done a really great job, both in your, not just the submission, but also in the quality of the programs that you offer. And we're really elated. Or no, elated, that's a little bit too much. We're very happy that you're going to be here in Arizona.
Well, thank you very much. That's very nice of you to say. And we're very much looking forward to being in Arizona and to working with Northwest. Thank you.
Great. Well, we'll come visit. And can we get a motion to approve the degree granting license and maintain the $15,000 surety bond?
Dr. Mittman, are you making that motion?
All right, I'll make one. And can I get a second then?
I'll second.
All right, Mr. Ball seconds, and Mr. LaMountain, the vote.
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Lubke, not present. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball? Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace is absent. Ms. Cardullo is absent. By your vote of 4 ayes and 3 not voting absent, the motion is approved.
Thank you very much for your time today.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. Yeah.
Okay. And next up is National Tractor Trailer School. Mr. Ball, you are on lead.
All righty. Is Mr. Wirth present? Oh, there he is. Would you like to make an opening statement, Mr. Wirth?
Yes, thank you.
I think you turn your volume up.
Yeah, Wirth, you're on mute.
No.
It's really hard to hear.
How about now? Is that better?
A little better. You're getting there.
Yeah,
keep going.
It's not audible on our end, and we need you to be audible.
Yeah, I'm trying to get there.
Do you want my computer?
Project. Project.
Let me go check a different computer.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh. Now, still, we still cannot hear you, Mr. Wirth. We heard Julie.
Yeah, we did hear Julie.
We still cannot hear you. If Dr. Mittman, if you want to move on, we can move to the next institution, then come back once they've figured out the. Okay, we'll come back to you, Dr. Mittman, if you're good with that.
Yeah, let's do that, please. Okay, next up is Perskolis. And Dr. Leck, you are our lead.
Thank you, Dr. Mittman. I would like to see if anyone from the institution would like to make an opening statement.
Hello, everybody. My name is Jacqueline Boyes. I'm the managing director for Perskolis in Phoenix. I'd like to thank the Arizona Post-Secondary for staff for working so diligently on helping us get our application put together. There's other states that Perskolis operates in, and so I've heard stories about what it's like to work with staff from other states, and I'd say that I have the very best story because they've been super, super helpful. So I thank the board for the time today, and welcome any questions about the application.
Well, great. Thank you very much. We like our board staff, too. So I read all your materials, and this institution was a little bit different for me. Kevin's shaking his head. Okay. And so that probably took me more of an interest side than the content of its side, because it is so different. So the first obviously difference that you have is that you don't charge direct tuition to students. And so I thought that was really interesting. So, but kind of got me some questions as far as it looked like you had, you know, a fair number of students participating in these programs. And I was curious as to how that fundraising went, because I'm assuming it's like corporate sponsorship. And then I'm going to assume that that's where those placements might be being made that you have at the end of the program.
Yeah, so Perskolis since 1995 has never charged tuition to a learner who has taken our classes. Because our goal is to help underrepresented groups get a career pathway in tech. So this can often look like low-income individuals people of color, women. We don't want their financial situation to be a barrier. And so how we came to Phoenix is we actually came in partnership with Tech Systems, which is an IT staffing company. They are all over the country, but they have a presence here. And so they seeded us the funding to really be able to launch and to get everything started. We also have partners at the national level that provide funding. So, you know, people like Google, Apple, and some of that funding comes down. And then there's local fundraising too. And so part of my role is to go out and to fundraise those dollars. That fundraising is typically coming out of a philanthropic arm. So even if it is corporate dollars, it's not always a ROI for them. So there are some classes, if it's completely funded by a company, we will offer them a 30 to 45 day courtesy placement. So hey, you know, try to get a job with tech systems for the next 4 to 6 weeks. But then after that time period, if they still haven't been placed, we actually have staff who will bring other companies in, other job leads in, because our ultimate goal is to get everybody who completes our program a job in tech.
Got it. Okay. So you have like the career people at every location helping that campus's right. students. Okay.
Yes.
So that was very, okay. So now I get that. The question I actually had, which is, I think, kind of interesting, is because students don't have any direct costs as far as paying for tuition, I was curious as to whether or not that created some type of churn, right? Because they don't have necessarily a skin in the game as far as they need to see it through. How do you, you know, is that, do you, what is like your retention and how do you overcome that if, you know, they can opt in and out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So we have, you know, obviously without having our applications and being licensed, we haven't operated within on-site campus, but we have offered, virtual classes and this, was going on, for people who lived in Arizona, prior to even the Per Schoolist Phoenix launch. And so we have a data set that I can share with you. So in our first virtual Java, full stack Java class, of the 24 students who started, 19 graduated. So we had a really high rate. And then of those learners, we're now at an 89% placement rate. We, you know, just to give you a quick picture of what this looks like in real life is, one of our learners was a delivery driver. He went through our course 15 weeks, and he is now working at a Fortune 500 company, as a coder, making $75,000 plus bonus every year. So I think the skin in the game is that through our recruitment and admissions process, we're really looking for people who want this, people who want a better life, people who want to provide for their families, people who know that they can be more and do more, but for whatever reason have been locked out of that. Maybe a four-year college just wasn't for them. So I think what tethers them to our program is really this opportunity. So instead of it being no cost, creating more people who churn, I actually get a lot of emails of gratitude and thankfulness, and, you know, really people being able to say, hey, I'm going to be the first person in my family who can buy a home, and that's just huge for them.
Great. Well, thank you for that. Something you just said just intrigued me, and I don't know if anyone, Kevin or Paul, might have picked up on it, but you're offering these courses online. Are you going state by state and ensuring that you're meeting the state requirements for authorization prior to doing that thing?
So we have virtual classes that are offered to anybody who is from all over the country. So they're able to take what's called remote training. But then in order to actually launch Perskolis Phoenix and to have classes here where we are recruiting Arizona students, able to bring them onto our program here is why we are pursuing licensure with you now.
Yeah, and I get that. That's great. It's that former part, right, that in order to enroll students into courses or programs, you have to make sure that you meet those state's requirements for licensure, whether it's virtual or not virtual. So I would encourage you or having whoever is in charge of your regulatory to make sure, because technically you would have to be authorized by a state prior to offering the virtual if that's a requirement of that state.
Got it. And do you know, I think, and we were working with somebody different prior. So Mr. Lamont, perhaps you can remind me here, but we had connected with a gentleman, and we were told, at the time that because the classes were virtual, that, that we didn't have to go through this process until we were starting to offer courses on the ground. So the due diligence was done, and that was the answer that we were given at the time.
And Dr. Leck, just a point of clarification through the application process and the times that we've met with Jacqueline and others at Perskolis, it was clear that this is an institution that's been around for quite some time and is operating in many, many states. And in terms of Arizona, they did want to have the physical footprint. And whether we choose to consider this institution, they're really opting in, although they do have the physical presence, they have the hours, but there's no tuition associated with the student. Mm-hmm. So I have a level of confidence based on the conversations that we've had with the institution that they are operating appropriately in the states that they're in. But that's just based on the information that was provided during the interview sessions. But I think to your point is good to make sure that the Perskolis as a institution throughout the country has the ability to recruit students and train students, online students in any of the states.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, double check. Okay. Thank you very much for all of that. I did review your catalog. There's a couple little things like missing some missing words and stuff that I picked up on, but overall it looks fine to me, especially because there is no tuition and the programs, I understand what you're offering. There was one on your readmissions, I think that's kind of a little loose. if a student wants to get readmitted, it says, you may have to do this or you may have to do that. And so what just popped into my head is, how are you ensuring equality, across the board if only some have to do an admissions application again or some have to do an interview question again? If they all meet specific criteria, I'm just suggesting it might be a good idea to make sure that they're all doing the same process so you don't get into pickles of, well, he didn't have to do this or she didn't have to do that kind of stuff. So a little bit of advice there.
Thank you.
I was curious because you offer the Java. Do your students typically take, like the certification exams to do that after they complete your program?
Yeah. So software engineering is one of the technical career paths that don't have a associated certification. And so in order to help people get jobs, in that path, we do what's called a case study. And basically they end up creating an entire back end and front end application that they work on over the 15 weeks. And then part of how we were able to get such a high placement rate is we will host hiring showcases where people can show their, actual code. And I found people who are hiring, that's a great thing about tech is it's kind of removes a lot of barriers. I mean, you know, if you know how to code, you know how to code, whether or not you have a bachelor's degree or you don't. By creating the class to really be more hands-on and giving them something tangible to show that they can code, that has been very effective for us to use in lieu of a certification, because there's just not one out in the industry around software right now.
Got it. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
The last comment that I have, and then I will turn it over to my colleagues, but on your website, I noticed specifically there was a call out and it says, 60,000 average salary per, and I'm sorry, I made it too small, average salary per, Scholus Java developer graduates make at their first job.
Yeah.
So, I've been doing this a very long time and, that's always a challenge to get information specifically like that. Cause right. It's going to be self-reported or, and so one of the things that I was interested in, and maybe it's just a caution to, the backup data for that, what percent of that of cohort over what amount of time, right? That you have that because I'm assuming that you have the ability to get everybody's, information and it's probably self-reported of some population size of the entire cohort of 1 year or, over several cohorts potentially. And so when I see that, I'm just curious as to where that number comes from. Do you have backup of it? Perhaps some qualifiers around what that number actually entails.
Yeah. So Prescolis in the 2000s, and we're currently under another study now, has undergone long-term random control trials, which is very unique for a nonprofit to do, just because they cost a lot and not a lot of funders want to fund them. But we're very data-driven, and so we want it to be able to have that data. So I want to just I want to just start there. How we verify a placement is a learner has to send us either a copy of their pay stub. They can send us an offer letter, or we use the work number, which is like a social security, if we can't get the information from them directly. And so we don't take like just an email from a learner or a call. There has to be something from the employer that states that. I am actually right now, and fingers crossed, I get the grant. But looking at some grant funding to make that even more stringent because we want to start collecting even deeper data around benefits. Because, it's like, yeah, you get time off, but do you get maternity leave or, not? So we're trying to get even further down with the data. So that 60,000 is coming from an average of Prescolis graduates. Here in Phoenix, for the first Java cohort, so the 16 learners out of the 19 who were placed, they averaged 56,000 a year. I believe that was because that class was a tech systems sponsored class. So tech systems has some really great kind of apprenticeship entry level roles that when you first come on board, you might be making 50, 55. But to keep a coder, once they've got a year under their belt, we expect to see those salaries go even higher. And so that data point right there is that first job, but we track people for two years post-graduation, as well as offering them continued coaching around salary, negotiation 2 years post post graduation to help them continue to be able to earn more.
But I think you hit it before, right? You said 16 out of 19 that have been placed. So the only thing I'm saying is that when that, because there's none of those qualifiers in there, right? It does say first job, but it doesn't say, you know, of the 19 graduates at so many placed, this is what it is, even if you have that hard evidence. It's,
so oh, it's more hearing, hearing, yeah, okay, yeah, no, I definitely hear you now. And there's, in those other three, we are still working to try to help them get to get them placed now. So I am hearing you say that it would be good to put a little bit of a qualifier so that doesn't come across as misleading to anybody who's looking at the site.
Maybe the date that you have the data or updated as of the date, all of those. That because it's just literally this block, and I was like, ooh, you know. So
great.
That's the end of my questions. Does any of my colleagues have any questions?
I have just a couple. One, I definitely respect where you're going and what that looks like. I wasn't quite clear of the obligation though, if the student like starts and stops or you know, anything from that standpoint, it doesn't look as though there's any obligation on the student's part outside of the returning of equipment that I believe is provided. So it really is like really no risk to the student is how I'm interpreting that. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. And then I was also trying to appreciate, and you may not know this from just the Phoenix perspective. I saw in the kind of projections, 80 students this upcoming year as an intent to get through. But organizationally across the states, I was trying to get perspective on like what volume it obviously they, I believe the number was somewhere around maybe 19,000 or something, graduates or people who've been through the program since its inception. Do you have an idea of how many students actually go through the program on an annual basis?
Yeah. So I want to give you the best last number if I can pull this up here. So Perskolis has recently been the recipient of a couple of large multi-million dollar capacity building grants, which is how we came to Phoenix. So Phoenix, Pittsburgh, Seattle all got planted under this growth. And so in the coming years, I believe, and I don't want to misquote myself, but I believe that in order to kind of meet those grant growth goals, we're looking at 4,000 learners by 2025. So we're looking at quite a bit of growth overall.
Okay, I guess as I was looking at the financials, it just struck me that in 2021, the company had expenses of $35 million. And so I was thinking to myself, that's either a lot of students going through that program or a really expensive program to run. And so that's why I was trying to get some perspective maybe around the 2021 numbers. It doesn't sound like it's the 4,000 as of yet, but.
No, but I can tell you in 2021, I should have that right here. Easy to bring up, what we did in 2021, right here under our national fact sheet. So 2021, we served, so in 2020, it was 1,950. Okay. In 2021, it was over 3,000.
Okay. Thank you.
So it's about, I mean, our costs, which again are never given to the learner, but can range depending on volume. So as a smaller site, right now, with, you know, overhead, my cost can be anywhere in the $13,000 to $15,000 range, but that's not, of course, as a nonprofit with funders, we need to drive that cost down. So the more people we serve, the more we can kind of spread out those costs. We try to hover around that closer to the $11,000 per learner, which is, you know, on track with what a for-profit school charges for the same type of technical training. Again, we're just doing it at no cost, so we can help those who are underrepresented in tech be able to get an opportunity.
No, it's great to hear. And then the final question I had was in regards to, I had a chance to look at the enrollment agreement and then the catalog, and the catalog talked about an application, but I didn't see an application in our folder for review. And I didn't know if we even needed to review the application from that standpoint, but it did sound like it would make sense. You probably have more hands that go up for this type of program than you have seats available, I would think. Maybe not true, but may become true. And so I didn't know what our obligation was in reviewing of the application from a consumer standpoint, given it's probably something in addition to the enrollment agreement.
So what the application process looks like, which we just revamped to make it more user friendly. So you would actually, you know, I can't wait to the day till we have more hands going up. I think, interestingly enough, we're kind of fighting against the fact that we don't charge anything. And so I think sometimes people think that it's a scam. And so, because of the groups that we're targeting, there can be confidence issues. There can be a lot of reasons why somebody doesn't believe that they're worthy or that they're capable of being able to do this. And so we made the application process really seamless and really simple. And so, really they start with just an interest form. So they just fill out a form online that says, I am interested. And then we invite them to a 1-hour virtual presentation where we go over the details. We say, hey, this is 9 to 5. You have to show up. If you don't have a computer, we will give you one. And so we kind of, you know, talk through both what we ask of them, but also a lot around the support. And then if somebody, elects to continue, that's when they're given the different reading and math tests that are talked about in there, just to make sure that, you know, that they're operating at a level that they'll be successful in the program. And then they're invited to a one-on-one interview that lasts about an hour. So it's less of a paper application process and more of a person-centered one. And so then during the hour, you know, we're asking things like, hey, do you have the support to be able to complete 15 weeks of this training without working? Are you interested in IT? Is this the career path that you really want? We're digging a little deeper on the behavioral side. I'm trying to make sure that this is the right time in their life for them to be able to join, and then they're offered a seat. So there's not like heavy on the, you have to fill out a 5-page application, you have to give us your resume. I think kind of similar to the concept that ASU has, like we're looking for ways to be inclusive, and we really pride ourselves more on the people that that we're able to include rather than to exclude from the program.
That's helpful. Thank you for that. Now, I'm assuming you keep a record of any denials for that as well. Okay. Thank you.
And then we are partnering with community-based organization. So if there's like a reading and math issue, then we would be like referring, over to some of our CDOs to kind of help them get that bridge. So even if they are denied, they're not helped.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah. That's all I had.
Thank you, sir.
Any other board members have any questions?
I had three. So before I do, I just want to say what a fascinating school. And so first of all, and very impressive board. And also your background, because I'm a fan of New Leaf and other organizations, and I know that.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm really glad that you guys are here. A couple of questions, well, three. In the audit, there are the two things. One is there's a significant amount of money from SNAP funding, which I always think of as supplemental nutrition or food stamps, and I was wondering how that plays into how that becomes a revenue source for Perskolis.
Yeah. So Perskolis Phoenix, it does not have that funding, right. And we don't plan
most of it's in New York,
but in other cities, so when I worked at Arizona Women's Education and Employment, which is AWE before it became a part of a new LEAF, we would actually, if somebody was eligible for SNAP benefits, and they came into our center and used our computer lab or used our phones or, you know, printed out things, based on every time you served somebody and helping them to get a job who qualified for that, there was a reimbursement from the SNAP program. So I'm imagining, without knowing the details of every other city, is that it must be something similar to that, where there's a workforce component under the SNAP program. And if we're providing some sort of services to them, that there's a reimbursement of partial cost for that.
Okay. Yeah. And the majority of it was in New York. And so that's probably your biggest center.
Yeah. Yeah. They serve 800 to 1,000, you know, I mean, so they are our flagship. So, everything started, in the Bronx. So they've got a little bit more, in-depth, complicated, partnerships with the government, with the city, not just because they've been there for so long.
Okay. And then you may have referenced this before, but in the audit, one of the sources of revenues is social ventures, about $2.6 million this last year and almost $5 million the year before. And that's, so social ventures revenues represent fees charged to the organization's clients for asset recovery services and providing customized training. And so could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. So Perskolis actually began as a computer refurbishing nonprofit where we trained people on how to refurbish computers, and then we gave them to low-income schools and to low-income families. And so that's where we started. And then we trained people so well, companies kept hiring the people. So we quickly were like, okay, we're actually a workforce agency. But there is still a part of our operations in New York that as learners are go through and get taught how to fix computers, those are refurbished and then can be sold. So it becomes an earned revenue stream. For the social ventures, we have what's called customized training, and this is really, really interesting. And part of why I decided to take this job, because a nonprofit that has not just philanthropic and government dollars, but has earned revenue streams, is just a stronger agency. And so the way that Perskolis does that is if a company comes to us and says, hey, we would like to train a group of people on, let's say, mainframe engineering, but because we're afraid that our workforce isn't going to be there, they can create what's called customized training with us, where they will work with our experts, and together we'll create a class that's customized for that company. And then we'll go out and we'll recruit and we'll train. And then kind of similar to that, like, you know, you got 30 to 45 days to hire. Otherwise, we will help place. And then companies will actually pay us to do that customized training. Really where we see growth opportunities, we're a very responsible and sustainable way as a nonprofit to grow is to continue to find more of those, partners where we can do that, customized training for.
Thank you. And then my last question is, do your students do internships as part of their, education?
Yeah, so the, Perskolis nationally hasn't really pursued a apprenticeship model. So I know that there are some schools and some programs that do that. We are really focused on the boot camp style training. So it's the 12 to 15 weeks, and then after that, immediately to placement. So I don't think, you know, at least for Perskolis Phoenix, we don't intend to pursue an internship strategy. But I will say, in the tech sector in general, a lot of companies have these kind of entry level apprenticeship, like, hey, you come in as a software engineer one, and then after 9 months, you can get bumped to a two, and then you can get bumped to a three. So I think because the tech needs, especially in our state, there's more jobs there and there are people to fill them. A lot of companies have kind of designed that. So if you've got enough of those basic skills, which we're giving, there's these kind of like onboarding programs that company have to help more of that entry level professional be able to grow into being where the company wants them to be.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Are there any other questions from board members? Okay, Dr. Mittman, if you would, I'd like to make a, oh, nope, I would not. Kevin would like to talk.
I just want to make a point of clarification on my recommendation, or the board's recommendation, where it makes a statement that potentially you could not have the bond based on no tuition. Unfortunately, in rereading the statutes and making it clear, this particular institution would need to maintain the $15,000 bond. I just want to make that as a point of clarification. So thank you.
Good timing, Kevin. Thank you. So if I can, Sir Tramman, I'd like to make a motion that we approve the conditional non-accredited degree program license with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond is maintained.
I'll second that. We have a motion and we have a second. And Ms. Boyes, do you agree to the stipulation?
Yes, thank you.
Security. Okay. All right. Mr. LeMountain, go for it.
He looks frozen.
Might be frozen.
He looks frozen.
I know, it's so funny. It's like, you know, it's sort of like in the lexicon. Did we ever say they look frozen?
He's very stoic.
Kevin, move. Move, Kevin.
Okay.
He's not. He left and he's back. But he's still.
See, that's the first time that's ever happened to me.
Now there's two of you, which is more disturbing.
Is there two of me?
There's two of you.
Two of me is disturbing? Is that what you're telling me?
Way more disturbing.
Okay, I apologize for that.
I can handle one.
All right. But I'm not echoing. I'm not echoing, right?
No.
Okay, good. All right. So apologies for that. Let's move forward. We have a motion. We have a second. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Lupke is absent. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace is absent. Ms. Cardullo? Ms. Cardullo is absent. By the vote of four ayes and three not voting, absent, the motion passes.
Okay.
Great. Thank you so much. I can go wipe my sweaty palms now, but thank you so much. Really, really appreciate not just your time today, but I can tell that you really took your time to read over everything and all of your recommendations too. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Welcome to the school, to Arizona, and to you, to your next adventure.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Okay. And we are back with National Tractor Trailer School. All right.
There you are.
Do we have an echo?
Yeah, if everyone mutes except for the speaker.
Okay.
I'll get rid of it.
Okay, can everybody hear me now?
Julie, would you like to make an opening statement?
No, thank you.
It sounds like we have the same issue as before, but whatever, just go sit right next to Julie because it's hers is working fine. So yell into whatever device she has.
I'll unmute. Take a seat.
Okay. Okay. Can anybody hear me now?
We are good. Thank
you. I can hear you.
Well, good afternoon, Dr. Mitt and Mr. LaMountain and board. I'm excited to be back here. I'm going to say back here. The first time I sat in front of this board was in, would have been in 1991. I've been in the school business since 1975. all of the United States originally with IKT Educational Services, and I know that they have a bad name now, but back in 1975 they were a good organization. And I also then owned truck driving school here in Phoenix, and we had one in Las Vegas, two in the LA area, and one in Denver, Colorado. About 3 years ago, I decided I was going to retire, and we sold the American Institute of Trucking, and about 3 weeks later, a gentleman from Swift Transportation that I knew for a long time called me and said, I want you to come over here to Swift, and we've got some academies over here that could probably use your assistance. Well, 3 years have gone by, and I'm still helping them, if you would. So you can't retire, I guess, when you're in the school business. Swift Transportation.
Good for us.
Swift Transportation actually owns through some subsidiaries National Tractor Trailer School. We actually purchased that about 3 years ago. They operate out of Liverpool and Buffalo, New York, and they also have a campus on Fort Drum there in New York. They've been in business for 50 years in that area. They were accredited school, Title IV, various programs. And like you said, we purchased them 3 years ago, and we are now making the Swift Academy here in Phoenix. We made them a branch of NTTS. It's been accredited. We've been licensed again for 40 years here in the Phoenix area. But one of the requirements, of course, for the Department of Education is that we have state authorization. We've been licensed by the Department of Transportation here in Phoenix, in Arizona, but they don't have the authority in Arizona to issue that authority to operate a post-secondary education. So that's why we're in front of you, so that we can become, a licensed again in the state of Arizona. Our program is a little bit different in that, again, it's a truck driving program. It's
owned by a trucking company. So we're training individuals to basically come to work for Swift Transportation when they graduate. A couple of things that are a little unique about how we operate is individuals must get pre-hired, meaning they must have a commitment from a trucking company before they start the program that that trucking company will hire them when they graduate. So, you know, we will ultimately end up then with a 100% replacement rate of everyone who graduates because they're all go to work for a trucking company. The other part is it's a little unique is that all of the companies that will hire our graduates all have tuition reimbursement programs. So once they graduate and they go to work for that company, every month they will send a check directly to the student's loan company if it's, you know, private loan or Title IV or whatever the case may be, as long as they work for that company up until they get their entire tuition reimbursed. So it's what I would consider, again, from my old days when I started in 1975 in the school business, it truly is a perfect situation where you have a job before you start. It's a short training program. If you stay with that original company, you're going to have your tuition paid for. And right now, an individual can graduate and make $60,000 their first year driving truck. Matter of fact, Swift Transportation guarantees individuals $1,000 a week for their first 6 months because they also know that during that six-month period, that new driver, again, is still learning, still becoming proficient at it, and they want to make sure that they have a decent living while they're going through that learning process. So that's kind of where we are, who we are, and what we're trying to accomplish.
Well, we're in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, it's funny. Like you said, in 1991, I started in the trucking industry, or in the school industry, and then specifically with trucking. And back then, there was a shortage of drivers, and everybody was going to solve it. Well, we're here now, you know, 30 years later, 40 years later, and there's still a shortage of truck drivers. So,
yeah. What is an experienced truck driver? How much money do they make?
It depends on really what they're doing. I mean, again, the individuals that do over-the-road type driving where they're gone like two weeks at a time, home for a couple of days and gone again, those individuals can make about $80,000 a year. Then once they get to become experienced, then they come become what they call a mentor. So like someone comes through our school, we train them, they get their CDL license. Company just doesn't take and throw them the keys and say, hey, hope, you know, they're in New York and hopefully you get to LA with that load. We'll see you later. They put them out with an experienced driver. We call them a mentor. And so that there's a, you know, experienced driver with them for the first, you know, few months. Those individuals get paid for every mile that truck runs. So those individuals can make $20,000 a year being a mentor for a trucking company. Now that it's interesting, you know, with what's going on in the industry, driver pay in the last year has probably gone up 20%, just because of the shortage of drivers, shortage of trucks. And everybody wants their freight moved, you know, the Amazons, the Costco's, Walmart's, and those big companies will continue to raise, to pay more to get those trucks to move their freight. So it's been a very good year, a couple of years for the trucking industry and for drivers for increasing their income.
Yeah. I just have one question. Looking at your financials, under recruitment expenses and education expenses, it talks about leased employees.
Right.
Tell me about that. I mean, are you using third-party vendors, or are you talking about people that you classify as independent contractors, or?
No, they're actually leased from Swift Transportation. I mean, we have a number of individuals that used to work or still work for Swift Transportation, if you would. But because National Tractor Trailer Schools is the actual owner of this school, we just leased people from Swift instructors and admissions individuals so that they can, because they have many years of experience with Swift, so they can still contribute or still participate in their their benefit programs, their 401ks, those kinds of things, instead of having to switch over the National Tractor Trailers benefit programs.
So when you get into Title IV, you have all those rules around how you pay admission staff.
Right.
You're all aware of that.
And yep. No commissions, only salaries.
Only salaries and no payment based on number of students enrolled in Title IV and all that.
No, only salaries.
Okay. Okay, I'm just opening up to the rest of the members and see if they have any questions.
Sure.
Anybody have any questions? Paul?
You answered a few from what you brought forward already. I just wanted to kind of circle around on a couple of them really quickly. Looking at the EA, I wasn't sure if there is an actual registration fee or not.
No.
Or an employment agreement?
No, there's no registration fee.
Okay. And then it does look like there's a fee, though, but maybe not applicable to all, for a physical and a drug test that's non-refundable. But I didn't see where that amount was disclosed anywhere.
Yeah, no, it's we have been out in the New York school. They charge separately for physicals, drug screens, all those things. And here in Phoenix at the branch, we are including all that in tuition. There's no additional expenses for the students here, other than they have to pay for their own CDL permit and their CDL license.
Which I did see called out. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But everything else is all included in the tuition.
Okay. That's helpful. And then I did notice on the refund portion, EA, the enrollment agreement versus the catalog, you provide kind of a scheduled refund for the truck driver program, but not for the other two programs. It does say it's available to the student upon request, but it just seemed a little confusing to me. If I were a student coming on board, your lowest program, you kind of provide that refund schedule with based on the days, and I totally get that piece of it. We've just traditionally seen it as more of a percent breakout over time, and I'm wondering how a student would gain clarity if they ended up doing one of the two other programs and what that refund schedule is.
Right, and we intentionally have not put in those refund policies in those longer programs yet, only because we're not going to offer them until we're Title IV eligible. So the only one that we're currently offering is the truck driving program. And okay. One of the things, again, with my experience over the many years I've been in the business, everybody always talked about refund policies. And really, when you talk to a student when they're leaving, they really want to know what they owe, not what you're going to refund to them. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's why you see that. See, our refund policies are already always noted as what the student will actually owe if they leave at a particular point in the program.
Okay.
And as soon as we start get Title IV eligible, we'll include all of the refund policies, not only the institutional refund policy, but also the Title IV refund, return to Title IV policy in the catalog.
Okay. And just kind of getting my arms around it, I thought I saw you were ACCSC approved.
Yes.
Is that just for the truck driver program or for all three programs?
Actually four programs, but we're only going to offer three here in Phoenix.
Okay. All right. So I think what I'm hearing you say is in Phoenix, you're not going to offer the other two programs as of yet. You're just going to offer the truck driver one.
No, in Phoenix, we're going to offer the advanced and the commercial and the truck driver.
Okay. So I just trying to come back around the refund policy piece of it. If you are going to enroll to it, right, I think you need a way to show what the refund schedule is.
Right. I totally agree with you, but we're not going to enroll for those two programs until we become Title IV eligible.
Okay.
And we can't become Title IV eligible until you license us.
Okay. All right. I know we're kind of chicken before the egg or.
That's fine. Yeah. This is kind of an unusual situation that, you know, like when we went to ADOT, the same thing when Swift purchased NTTS, and then they became a branch. This Phoenix became a branch of them. ADOT said, well, why are you here? And we said, well, it's really kind of a change of ownership. And they said, no, it's not. It's just a change of name.
Yeah.
Then we went to VA to get VA, and we said, okay, it's a change of ownership. And they said, no, it's not. It's just a change of name. And I said, okay, you guys tell us what you want us to do. So
welcome to the world of the regulatory environment,
yeah.
Right?
So it's a little kind of confusing because in this, you know, actual institution's been in business for 40 years, but just in front of you this now. So.
Well, I know you'll have at least two sets of eyes on the refund policy based on ACCSC and then also on our post-secondary board as well. So we may want to add that into any motion of just a view of, you know, after the fact. It doesn't need to be prior to, but just to make sure that we are in compliance with that piece of it. But I'll leave that to whoever ends up making the motion. I was also curious, non-related to your materials, but I believe there was a movement at one point to try and lower the age for drivers to come into the system. Has there been any success in that? Or it looks like it's still 21 years of age, but
it is. There is a piece of legislation that's going through Congress right now to lower it between 18 and 20. You should be to do it in 18 to do interstate. Right now, like in state of Arizona, if you're 18, 19, or 20, you can get a CDL, but you can only drive interstate. You can't, or intrastate, you can't drive interstate. But so you couldn't drive from here to, you know, New Mexico, but you could drive all the way up and down the state of Arizona. So it's kind of a strange situation. But there is a law going through the legislation right now to lower it to 18.
Okay. I figured you'd be the guy to know.
Yeah. there was also just February 7th, some new rules that came about with entry-level driver training. Prior to this, there was never a national standard, and the national standard now was set on February 17th. So a lot of things are happening in the driver ranks.
Sure. Understandable. Thank you. That's all I had.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I had a question. Thanks so much, Mr. Worth, for the submission. Everything is really in order. You included in the documents a improvement plan, and you did lose money the last couple of years, it looks like, or last year, I'm not sure. I was just wondering, in looking at it, is that your plan?
Yes.
Uh-huh. The document?
Yes.
And so how much does Title IV figure into the improvement, like the revenue improvement plan?
Well, the plan that you saw, that actually the pro forma income statement that's on there does not have any Title IV in it. That is only what we're currently doing now with the truck driving program. That's, you know, 400 students a year is about what we're currently doing. The statement that you're seeing when we say we lost money last year was a couple of things. One, it was, you know, only 6 months worth of the academy here in Phoenix. And then the National Tractor Trailer in New York, theirs was all really based upon COVID. I don't know if you heard, but, you know, New York State was really tough on schools having to be closed. And so they've been on and off closed for many months over the last 2 years.
All right. I was actually looking at the really involved and kind of wild, not a flow chart, but it's the document Swift Driving Academy strategy for institutional improvement, July 2021. And I'm always fascinated by strategic plans, mostly because most of them don't actually get used. And I was just wondering, like, how, because and this is probably a little bit self-serving because I'm always like, figure out like, well, what's a good strategic plan that actually works? And I was just wondering, you know, with the diagram that you've got, like, how are you tracking that? It looks, I mean, you updated it 6 months later. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, it's called a balanced scorecard is what the whole system is. And it was originally done, gosh, I don't know, 15 years ago or something like that. And the first part is you see the map, as we call it, you know, and that everybody in the organization understands that and how all is intertwined in one department, you know, depends on the other department.
Is everybody on the call? Do you have this in front of you? If not, I can share. Is that all right? Am I allowed to do that?
Yeah, sure.
Is that all right? Because it is confidential.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure.
I'm going to see if I can share my screen. Okay, I'm going to share my screen. Screen one. Share. And can't share your screen. It's not going to let me. Well, at any rate, it's a great, I could do like an interpretive dance of your, map, but, it's got learning and growth perspective, internal process perspective, market perspective, financial perspective. It looks like it all starts at the bottom with learning and growth and everything kind of flows upward from there.
I think we've got, thought Ms. Rome was going to try to get it up there. Yes, and each one of those is a different perspective, and it shows how one builds on the other. The bottom, you know, if you would, the bottom section, sort of like building a house, if you would. You got to build that foundation to be able to make the house stand up and continue to serve the top part of the house, if you would. And then you ask, how do we track it? And normally, if you look on all the other pages on the right-hand side, it really tells you how often we track it, where we track it. We have weekly managers' meetings, and we track different portions of it on a weekly basis, monthly, quarterly, whatever the case may be. But yes, it is totally a process, and it is a living document.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you.
Now, some people at ACCSC don't necessarily like it, but that's we use it, and it's very, very useful to us. So,
great. Well, thank you very much, Professor Worth, for the tutorial.
No, that was very short. I can send you some information on it if you'd like the you know, actually instructions of how to use it and build it, but I'll send it to you.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
The Harvard Business School, I think, actually designed it or put out the article. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great. Thanks so much.
Uh-huh.
All right. That was my only, wasn't even a question. It was just like a favor.
Yeah, no problem.
Anybody else with any comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve the regular vocational and degree program license with the stipulation that the surety bond be increased from $15,000 to $282,703.
Wow.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Worth, do you agree to the stipulation about increasing the surety bond?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Lubke, absent. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace, absent. Ms. Cardullo, absent. By your vote of 4 ayes and 3 absent, the motion passes.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you, everybody. I appreciate it.
Enjoy the end of your retirement.
Yeah. My wife and I have been working on a 5-year plan for the last 15 years. So.
Okay. We should have
you'll see me at a couple renewals, I'm sure.
I don't think your strategic plan is working. I'm just saying.
Yeah, Yeah, put one together for that. All right, we're good. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Have a nice evening. Thank you.
Mr. LaMountain, do we have any, I don't have the, well, I do have the agenda in front of me, I think.
That, Mr. Allam, if you'll progress the slide.
Yeah, got it.
And
I think
next we're good. Meeting.
Oh, okay.
So Dr. Mittman and members of the board, so the next committee meetings are Thursday, March 24th, finance and complaint. We do have a complaint that we will be running through the complaint committee. So, and then the next meeting in April, if we were to look at the third or the fourth Thursday of the month, we have a NASAPS meeting in New Orleans that some of us will be attending. And that is, we'll be leaving on that Thursday, which is the 20th. Sorry, let me get out here to April. Okay. And what I was hoping is that we could just move this from.
To June?
Well, I appreciate that.
I heard September. Anyone for September?
That would be helpful to the board staff if we just pack everything towards the end of the year, but I don't know that that's appropriate. So what we were hoping for is a movement to the 27th of April, which is a Wednesday as opposed to a Thursday. If there would be any issue, I will still reach out to the other board members. Jacqueline?
Hey, Kevin and members of the board, the 27th is actually when we are coming back, I believe.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
New Orleans. So I think you wanted it the Wednesday prior.
Yeah, so Wednesday prior. I apologize. Thank you, Jacqueline, for, so it would be
the 20th.
The 20th.
Okay.
Awesome. So if no issue, then I will send that, information out to the board and get you there.
Is everybody here good with that? Dr. Lack, Mr. Paul.
Yep, I'm good.
That's good.
Okay, good. All right. Way to go, everybody. So, we get a motion to adjourn?
A motion.
Thank you.
Yes, I can.
That was Mike. All right, thanks
a lot. No comments, Mike? None? I raced to do it this time.
All right.
I couldn't get myself off mute last time.
Was it, in some ways it was a short agenda, but it was a lot of work. And so thanks to the staff and to our state.